I ended up going to Iraq in February of 2008, and I had 6 weeks with him, essentially. And this was a battalion that had already, they were part of the surge, and as such, they were on a 15-month deployment, and they were not troops living on these big bases. They were spread out into these small combat outposts in an area called Arab Jabor, which is just southeast of Baghdad, and at one time had been a very restive area. And the battalion, by the time I caught up to them, they had already lost 15 men. And so it had been a very bloody, long summer for them. And this was when the Sons of Iraq movement was first coming up, and this battalion was very heavily engaged in working with men in the area who had been, you know, former Sunni insurgents who were now working for the Americans under these the Sons of Iraq movement. And so it was interesting to me because I had never seen that area of Iraq before, and just going from outpost to outpost and getting to know these guys. I knew that my biggest challenge in this story, well, several challenges. One, as I said, I mean, I'm obviously an Indian woman, and the reaction from a lot of army units, we're culturally come from very diverse backgrounds, and it takes a lot longer for me to be accepted by them than, say, my photographer, who's a, you know, good old Georgia boy. And so that we've talked about it all, during this conference, how important it is to gain the trust of people that you're wanting to write about. For me, I felt I had to go that extra mile to do that, because the initial reaction from every Army unit that I've ever embedded with is when they see me is they're like, are you the new interpreter? You know. So that was a challenge. And then another challenge was I didn't grow up in a Judeo-Christian family. I read the Bible in the ninth grade as a piece of literature. And so before I left for Iraq, I actually sat down and read both the Old and New Testaments again, because I felt that I was, if I didn't know what the chaplain was talking about, then there wouldn't be any depth to this story. I had to be able to know exactly what he was talking about when he quoted from the Bible. And the other thing, of course, was that I had to have access, which when you're embedding with a military unit in Iraq, it's challenging for a whole host of reasons. And in this case, I was asking to actually sit in on counseling sessions, you know, very private, very intimate counseling sessions with soldiers who were contemplating suicide, soldiers who were going through divorce, soldiers who had seen their buddies get blown up in front of them. And so that took, you know, for the first few days I was there, I didn't do anything but just go out on patrols with these guys, trying to get to know them better. And the chaplain was very good in when I was around, coming and getting me and asking soldiers if I could sit in on sessions. But often it didn't work that way. Often, you know, I would find out I'd be sitting in my tent working on other stories, because I did have to file other stories for the paper while I was doing this. And somebody would run in and say, hey, you better go check out what's happening in the chaplain's office. He's got some guy who was, you know, on suicide hold in there talking to him. And I tried very, very, very hard to be respectful of those people who did allow me into their lives like this. I usually would sit underneath the chaplain's desk in the one corner of the tent so the person who he was talking to couldn't even see me. Just wrote down everything I could from those conversations, and only later did I realize how challenging that was, because there was no interpretation of those conversations there. And if you're working if I was working in Atlanta, I guess the process would have been to observe the story, and then when I sat down to write it and organize my notes, I would have had the luxury of then getting on the phone with this chaplain and saying, well, you know, here's a whole conversation that I wrote down where you're talking to a young sniper who's just made his first kill, but he doesn't quite understand the burdens of war yet. And you're talking to him about killing. Well, do you believe that all killing is a sin? But I couldn't ask him those questions anymore after I left Iraq. And it became a very slow and rather tedious process, because I had to do it all by email. And my editors don't know this, but I ended up actually sending him huge chunks of the story so that he could see it, and because I wanted to make certain that I had gotten into this man's head, or I was trying to get into this man's head, and I wanted to be absolutely certain that I had done it correctly. So I know we had a discussion about this in one of the sessions yesterday, whether it's okay for journalists to read back their stories, or even in this case, I was forced to show him large chunks of the story because I couldn't call him. But it made me feel better that I had done that. So anyway, that's the story I did. And I had actually no idea that it was going to be an 8-part serial narrative when I went there. My editor and I, for every assignment that I take on, we have this exercise that we do where we talk about what the story might be at its minimum and what the story might be at its maximum. And in this case, a bare minimum would be a profile of a Georgia chaplain in Iraq. And I think I came pretty close to getting the maximum, just because there were certain events that occurred that made the story more dramatic than I imagined that it would be. It was, you know, I wanted to spend Easter with him because Easter was the most important day for him. And after Easter was when Sadr City was, things were getting really bad in Sadr City, and the base that he was on came under fire every day. And so tensions were high and several other soldiers were killed while we were there. So what happened in the story was I went to document this young green chaplain who went into battle thinking he would save these young souls. And if, in the arc of the narrative, where you get to the last chapter, you see how he's sort of like the sponge for the whole battalion. All through the story, he's absorbed all the wounds of all his soldiers. And by the end of it, you see him so completely spent, where he, you know, blurts out, his anger comes out in what he says. And he, at the very end, the story started with Walter Reed, and in the very end of the story you hear him saying, "I don't want to go to Ibn Sina," which is the combat hospital in the Green Zone, where 9 of his men have been taken from a burning Bradley. And he says it because he's just completely done. He's so stressed out by that point. So I had not ever imagined that to be the arc of my narrative, but that's how it ended up. And when I came back, we decided to do it as an 8-part series because I had so much information, and to be able to actually show that, we needed the space in the paper, and that's how it ended up being that.